The students were standing around him and the walls of the house started shaking. And they realized that the house was going to cave in. And the poor man was lying there in bed, no hands, no feet, and body covered with boils. And he said, "You guys, you go out first, leave only the students that are required to take my bed out of the house." And that's what they did. Everyone left the house until there were only enough students to take his bed. They lifted his bed, took it out of the house. No sooner had they left the house than the house collapsed. They turned to Nachum Yishgamz and they said, "We see your piety. God wouldn't collapse the house as long as you were inside, and you knew that if you went out first, it might collapse on the rest of us. So why are you lying like this? Why did God do this to you?" Nachum Yishgamz said to them, "I did it to myself." What did he mean? He said, "I was once traveling and I had my animals laden with food and wares, and I had come to a stop and I wanted to unload the animals. The poor animals were suffering under the weight. There was no reason not to take the wares off an animal. And a poor man came to me and said, 'Rebbe, please give me some food.' And I said, 'I'll get to you shortly. Let me just unload the animals and then I'll bring you to eat.' And I went about continuing to unload the animals. And when I came back to the poor man, he had died of starvation. He had come to me with his last strength. And when I realized what I had done, I realized that I had taken care of the animals at his expense. I threw myself on his body and I said, 'My hands that were not swift to feed you, let them fall off. My feet that were not swift to run and get you food, let them fall off. My body that was not swift to take care of you, let it be covered with boils.' And all the curses I said upon myself came true." That was Nachum Yishgamz. You guys know, you've heard of Nachum Yishgamz? Nachum Yishgamz, there's a village called Gamzu here in Israel. Whatever happened to him, he used to say, "Gamzu litova. This too is for good." So the first lesson he taught us was that when we have to evaluate what we honor, who we take care of, our animal, a human being, obviously a human being comes first. And even though he was busy doing a good deed, he was taking care of his animals, but he should have stopped what he was doing, giving the poor man to eat. And this, you want an halacha to him? This is halacha. If someone comes and asks us for food, the halacha says we must stop what we're doing and give them food. If a person asks for charity, asks for money, so then we can say, "Wait a second, I got to check you out. Maybe you're a charlatan. Let me see who you are." But if a person comes and asks for food, we must stop what we're doing and give him food. You never know, maybe the guy's on the verge of dying of hunger, just like the poor man who came to Nachum Yishgamz. Nachum Yishgamz, the second thing he taught us was that whatever happened to him, he would say, "Gamzu litova. This too is for good." Now, people sometimes misinterpret it. They think it means, you know, everything God does is for good. We have such a Mishnah. Whatever God does is for good. People think it means, you're carrying a bunch of bricks, you drop one on your toe, you should say, "Thank God I dropped a brick on my toe. Boy, that's wonderful." No, that's not what he said. What he said was, "Gamzu, this too must be for good." Meaning, there are things I recognize are for good, and then there are things where I say, "This too, if God let this happen, then there must be, it's all going for the good." What's an example of that? Our sages tell us that there was once a situation where the Jews wanted to send a gift to the Caesar, to the Roman Emperor. So they said, who should we send as a representative? We'll send Nachum Yishgamz. Because Nachum Yishgamz, he frequently says, "Gamzu litova, this too is for good." And God usually takes good care of him. I mean, we can assume miracles happen where he's around. So they send Nachum Yishgamz with a chest filled with jewels and gifts for the emperor. I don't know of a source as to whether this story happened before he lost his limbs or after he lost his limbs. Logic would dictate that it happened before he lost his limbs, because when you send your representative to the emperor, you usually don't send a person who is a cripple.
Logic would dictate the whole thing's metaphorical.
What?
Logic would dictate the whole thing's metaphorical.
Ooh, now you're opening a Pandora's box. That we could discuss, whether the whole thing is metaphorical. If you guys want, we'll stop our story and go over that discussion. No, what's the vote?
He obviously wants it. Zach?
Finish the story and then we'll go.
We won't have time. Maybe tomorrow. Tim?
Yeah, man.
Okay, but he, okay.
He's stopped on it, so maybe he
go. Okay. The verse says in the Torah that Moshe is describing to the Jewish people, you were coming to the land of Israel, and you were coming to cities that were fortified till the heavens. Were the cities really fortified till the heavens? No. So we have a verse that seems clearly metaphorical, right? Chazal tell us that you do have verses that are metaphorical. You do? What's the beginning of Mishlei, Proverbs? What does King Solomon tell us? Lavin, he says, I'm writing these proverbs to educate and give wisdom to people. Lavin mashal umlitza divrei chachamim v'chidotam. To be able to discern, to decipher what our sages said as an allegory, as a metaphor, and understand the hidden meaning. So, yes, there are definitely mishalim, metaphors. There are definitely similes. There are definitely allegories. Yes, you have that in Tanakh. But let's take another verse. What's the first of the Ten Commandments? Oh. Once you take the Torah and say there are metaphors, and you just open that door and you say, well, parts of the Torah are to be understood literally, and parts are as a metaphor, and whatever seems to me is metaphorical must be metaphorical, then you understand that we could easily take that verse and also make it metaphorical. God says, it's only me up here. I'm the only God and I'm running the show. Maybe it's a metaphor.
How could that be a metaphor? What's that metaphor for? I think that's very different to
the 10 plagues. God says in the Parashas of Eschanan, I did miracles in Egypt so that you could see with your own eyes that I took you out of Egypt, that I'm involved, that I run the world. I gave you living proof that I'm the one running the show, be it the miracles I did in Egypt, be it the miracles I did at Sinai. Metaphorical or literal? Did the Nile turn to blood? Or is it all metaphor? You know, they were throwing babies inside. It must have turned a little red. So then the Torah describes it as Makas Dam, the Nile turned to blood. So I think it's pretty obvious that that's not the case. Because
the way that's described is different. I mean, you get many stories such as...
Wait. We'll get to Chazal. Okay. I'm saying, but let's go step by step.
Okay, fine.
This use of... So when it comes to the Torah, we have a tradition, what is metaphorical and what isn't. And if we're not going to go with that tradition, then you could uproot the whole Torah. You agree with me on that?
Okay,
on the Torah. I'm not talking about stories in the Medrash yet.
Yeah, okay.
That's agreed?
You have to take the Torah as true, to a degree.
You have to go with the tradition. A metaphor is also true. But the question as to whether what parts of the Torah are to be taken literally and what not... Well, the Torah says an eye for an eye, and our tradition is that you do not take an eye for an eye.
That's because the oral law.
Oh, so that's tradition. The oral law is tradition. Why is it called oral law? Because it's passed orally as tradition from one to the next. We happen to write it down.
Yeah, but we don't take the oral law as like...
Let's go one step at a time. About the Torah, are we in agreement?
That you need to take it. Literally, yes.
Going with the tradition.
Yeah,
when our tradition says you take it literally, you go literally.
Okay, of course.
Yeah, Tim, are we all on the same page? Yeah, Zach? Okay, so we finished all the Bible. Yeah. Torah and Vayim and Ksuvim. Over there we're in agreement that there we have to go with the tradition. And now we're out of time. So we'll have to pick up over here tomorrow, Bezrat Hashem, if you guys so choose, about the oral law. The issue that he brought up, which needs to be discussed. He's got an excellent point. Tomorrow we'll have to pick up with that. How do we treat the oral law? There are many fantastic things. Our sages say they walked off the ship, they started going across an island, suddenly the island started moving, and they discovered they were on this tremendous fish that was the size of a huge island. Is that literal?
And
Chazal say there's this huge animal that eats mountains every day. Why didn't anyone see it in the last few millennium? Why haven't we seen such an animal? Chazal tells all kinds of things. So, oh, I definitely agree with you.
These stories aren't meant to be taken actually. I mean, there are many stories.
I agree with you. Yeah. I'm just saying that we should quantify it. Because if we don't, just like with the written law, if we just open it up and say, well, you decide what's metaphorical and what not, so then you can abolish the whole written law. But the same token with the oral law, if there isn't going to be a system, then you could take a lot of things in the oral law and turn them into metaphors, and you're going to end up the same way you would have with the written law. But that we'll discuss tomorrow if you guys so choose. Whatever you guys decide. Don't.